Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. It's good to be with you. We've got both Kirk and JB here today. How are you, fellas?
Good evening. Good.
Doing good.
Good. Last night, I was not feeling really well. I got food poisoning, but I was just to take my mind off it, I just kept translating. Sometimes when you don't feel your best, your focus is better than it would be at any other time. And the last passage that I translated last night, I'm going to read to you, and then I'm going to read what I wrote this morning, even though it's not exactly where we're going to begin, where we had thought we're going to begin today's show. But something rather extraordinary happened in Israel, and I wrote about it as a result of this passage. Speaking of the benefits of Chag Matzah, God revealed, and it shall exist on your behalf as an awe-inspiring sign for your hand and for the influence and your actions. And it represents a memorial reminder and commemoration for a retrospection depicting a record worth recalling, a zikaron for comprehension between your eyes. The purpose is so that the Torah teaching and guidance of Yahweh exists in your mouth and thus in your speech. Indeed, because the powerful, strong, and resolute Chazag hand of Yahweh brought you out, removing and delivering you from the oppressive nature of religion and politics and Mitzrayim. This is the day of days. Yahweh has told us twice that matzah, unyeasted bread, is a mikra, an invitation to be called out and meet, and a moed, an eternal witness to the appointed meeting times. On two occasions, he revealed that it is kodesh, set apart, which is the highest designation possible. Twice, he's called unyeasted bread estim, essential, foundational. Similarly, he has designated it as a chag, a festival feast. And now for the second time, he is referring to matzah as a zikaron, something worth remembering. More explicit even than calling chag matzah a Shabbaton, Yahweh referred to its foremost day as a Shabbat celebration of the Sabbat, using the actionable form of the word. Thrice, he has affirmed this association by asking us to celebrate its intent for 7 days. And this is one of the countless times that God has described the purpose of the mikra of matzah, affirming that through it, he has yatza min Mitzrayim, removing us from the cauldrons of religious and political oppression. The only thing in the whole of the Torah which rises to the level of the demarcation and celebration of matzah is Yahweh's name. Now that's something worth remembering. Before I go on, I have to tell you, I was always of the conclusion that of the seven Moed Mikre, while Sukkah was the most enjoyable and Pesach the clearest in terms of its purpose, matzah was the most important. But it wasn't until I went back through this material, I'm now retranslated 80 pages with commentary, that I realized that far and away, the Mikra Matzah, Chag Matzah, is the single most important day on Yahweh's calendar. Nothing even approaches it in importance. Now, the Mikra Matzah played a pivotal role in the lives of the chosen people, with Yahweh liberating them from the land of Mitzrayim. By so doing, unyeasted bread has become an awe-inspiring sign for us and is symbolic of God's willingness to purge the Mitzrayim from our lives. In this illustration, our hands, our eyes, and our mouths are metaphors, with God wanting what he did for us on this day to influence our actions, influence our perspective, and our dialogue with others. Chag Matzah is worth remembering. It's worth proclaiming. It is one of the Torah's greatest gifts. Now, when pondering how to spend this day, which is something we often ask, consider Yahweh's advice. Let Yahweh's Torah guide your hands, sharing what we have experienced with others. Let this perspective on this day lead to understanding. And as you observe the Torah, let God's words flow from your mouth. This time last week, I was bobbied up and down in a beautiful bay called Maho, in an idyllic Caribbean island called St. John. I was on Cora with 10 friends. And as I did that, I knew I had cellular connectivity, and I could call in, but I couldn't host the show. I couldn't access on a computer in the office on the boat. So, I'd asked Kurt to be in charge of the show. And Kurt, one of the things that you did, in fact, the thing that you did was this very thing. You brought together two really extraordinary individuals, Molly and Mike. Mike does the fact-checking for all of the books. Molly is the lead among the editors. And you ask them, how do you observe the Torah? What does observing the Torah mean to you? How do you apply God's admonition to your life? And clearly what God is saying here with that last statement, with the words of the Torah being in our mouths, with this day influencing our actions and our perspective, that's what God is saying. Let the Torah influence who you are, what you say, what you do. The enactment and fulfillment of the Mikra of Matzah, it remains awe-inspiring. It depicts events within the fabric of history. The invitation to be called out of meat, of unyeasted bread, is symbolic of God perfecting us, cleansing us of the diabolical influence of religion and politics. This particular statement serves as a great example of religion run amok. Orthodox Jews wear phylacteries, or tefillin, on the back of their hands and on their foreheads, each with Torah snippets contained in them. not understanding their reference to one's eyes and hand was similar to the mouth. I'm surprised they don't put one there, too. Rabbis go so far as to claim that Shemoth Exodus 13:9, which is what I just read, demonstrates the need for their oral law and for books like the Babylonian Talmud, because the Torah does not explain how to build their silly boxes, how they should be worn, or what verses should be contained in them. Desperate is too kind a word. At this point, I was barely functional with the food poisoning. Didn't sleep last night. But I returned to the keyboard. I had read an article. Sometimes if I can't sleep in the middle of the night, that's one thing that cell phones are good for. My go-to is the Jerusalem Post, for obvious reasons. I'm interested in what is happening there. And I read that at 1 o'clock in the morning in northern Israel, there was a tragic waste of lives. Last night, 45 Orthodox Jews. And excuse me for saying this, but I'm looking at a picture of thousands of them, all huddled as they were 2 years ago, for this grand event of theirs, in their hideous mourning clothes and their black hats. Well, this year, 45 of them were trampled to death by the first 100,000 Haredi during Lag BaOmer, a religious festival on Mount Meron. Many of those who died were children who were poisoned by their fathers. This, the worst civilian disaster in Israel's modern history, occurred as Hasidics were commemorating the end of a plague which killed 24,000 of Rabbi Akiva's disciples, Rabbi Shimon Ba-Yakai, chief among them. He was the author of the Zohar, the father of Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism. And he was said to have died on this day, last night, the 33rd day of the counting of the Omer in the 2nd century. Orthodox Judaism's reverence for this despicable man inexcusably shortened the lives of his faithful, of those who value his words, and those of his mentor, Akiva, over Yahweh's testimony. God gave his people every advantage, every opportunity to know him, to serve with him, and to be part of his family. He revealed his word through them and saved them. And yet this is how they have squandered and repulsed his generosity. I have devoted the last 20 years of my life to awakening Yisraelites and Yehudim, calling them back to Yahweh, to Moshe, to Dod, and to Yosha. And at times like this, it is so very frustrating to see them act so foolishly and counterproductively. I've always known that there was no opportunity to save anyone among the 6% of Jews who are Haredi, ultra-Orthodox. Hope is slim for the 19% who are modern Orthodox and conservative. Religion remains mankind's most deadly vice. Recognizing this reality, I translate and write for the 40% who were only Jewish by ethnicity, and the 30% who, as reformists, only celebrate their people's traditions. They will more willingly consider renouncing the residue of Mitzrayim within them. Yahweh wants his people to recognize the essential role of the Mikra of Matzah and the role it plays in removing his children's religion and politics. He is telling us that it serves as an awe-inspiring sign of what he has done and will continue to do for us on this day. The invitation to be called out in meat of unyeasted bread is a memorial worth commemorating. It may be too soon to have written that, too soon to have said it. But indeed, it is something that needs to be said. Sacrificing one's life to commemorate the death of a man so revolting, when there isn't one in a million of the 15 million ethnic Jews on the planet who would lift a finger to advance knowledge of Yahweh, his Torah, and his name. Now I would like to chastise another religion, if I may.
By all means.
I translated this about a week ago. I sent it to you, Kirk, and I'm sorry to hear that you're having vision issues and haven't really had a chance to contemplate it. I think I might have even sent it to you, JB, but it's a new translation of Daniel that I did for the second of two chapters on Pesach that have recently been rewritten. And I want to put something in perspective for the Mikes, who was part of your show. He's my fact checker. He's Yahweh's fact checker. No one's my anything. He's Yahweh's fact checker. He doesn't fact check Yahweh. He fact checks my attempt to convey what Yahweh has revealed to us. Molly, who is preeminent among the editors, J.K., who does a marvelous job of editing the queen of the new series, Jackie. We have essentially, just in the rewrite, produced what back in the day, I want to use a reference here that will date me, but it's about the size of an encyclopedia series, like for those that had the old World Book encyclopedia on their shelf, or Britannica.
Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah, you know, where it covers like 2.5 feet just in the spine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how much the team has rewritten, retranslated, and edited thus far in this process.
Nice.
And we're now about three-quarters of the way through the first of two volumes on the Moed Mikra. And at the conclusion of the Pesach chapter, talking about the timing of its fulfillment, I turned back to Daniel 9. It was one of the most jaw-dropping experiences I've had in a long while. I want to read it and share with you what it means. Now, know, yada. Be aware by coming to possess the information required to recognize, call imperfect Joseph, and gain the insights to understand. Wa shakal, be prudent after learning. Hifl, imperfect Joseph. Now, before I read you further, can you guys think of many times where Yahweh adds a shakal to a yada? Sometimes we see him adding a ben to a yada. Ben means to understand. Yada means to know. But this is, no, be aware, come to possess the information, and then gain the insights to understand. This is Gabriel, he's speaking to Daniel. So he's right now trying to tell us, you better pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to say next, you're just not going to get if you just plow through it. Pay attention to what's coming. Make the connections to understand. Now know and gain the insights to understand that from the going forth of the word, Motza Dabar. The stage being set to begin the process in accord with the message. To return and restore Shub, rebuilding Labana, Jerusalem, until Neged. Every one of your religious bibles says prince, but Neged doesn't mean prince. Moreover, Yosha wasn't a prince. Mm-hmm. Until the testimony, odd, of Neged. The capricious counterpart. Conspicuous, I should say, not capricious. Conspicuous counterpart. Well known. Out there for everyone to see. The conspicuous counterpart who is publicly perceived and announced. Neged, the venerated status of a messenger who appears to correspond to another who is actually beyond him. Let me read that again. Neged, the venerated status of a messenger who appears to correspond to another who is actually beyond him, from Neged, the one popularly declared and proclaimed to resemble the one holding the high office. As a Masiach, appointed, anointed, transliterated Messiah, from Mashach, smeared with anointing oil, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. This doesn't say the coming of the Christ. This doesn't say the coming of the Messiah. This says until there is a conspicuous counterpart who is perceived to be a Messiah. Until there is an inner individual who is venerated with the status of a messenger who appears to correspond to another who is actually beyond him. So the Christian Christ stole every title. He didn't. Those who announced him and publicly perceived their views of him took every title away from Dode and gave it to him. That is what this is saying. Oh, and it gets worse. It says, publicly perceived as a Masiach, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. She shall return. And the cultural center of the city shall be built, along with a trench, in a troubled time of dire straits. First of all, Jerusalem wasn't rebuilt. The temple was rebuilt. And it was rebuilt long before Yosha. Further, there was never a cultural center of Jerusalem. They didn't have a public square, a city hub, a plaza.
Italian.
And, oh, by the way, there was no trench, no moat. In a troubled time of dire straits, Waba Shok Ha'etz, during a period of anguishing oppression, restrictions, and distressing hardship. Yeah. The Romans were got to be horrific, particularly following Akiba's false messiah. But that occurred in 133. That was 100 years later.
Mm-hmm.
The words don't apply, so I guess what they do as Christians is they just skip over them. But it gets worse. And before I say it gets worse, It was after a time of dire straits. The 133 attack of the Romans, where they salted the land, destroyed the city, and hauled Jews into Europe during the Diaspora of slaves. It was during that time that Yosha was falsely proclaimed the Messiah. And after the 62 weeks, a person with special authority approved by God, Messiah, shall be cut off and eliminated. Karath. Shall be cut off and eliminated? Will be cut down and severed, even banished, and then eradicated, ceasing to exist? Well, that's not the story of the Christian Christ, is it? It is the story of the Passover lamb. But it's not the story of the Christian Christ. But not for himself. And he is not. This is where it really, really grabs your gut. Then the people, the nation, masculine singular, of the conspicuous counterpart who is publicly perceived and announced to correspond to another who is actually beyond him, who are to come, will sully and devastate the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come under an overpowering force. What God just said is the real prophecy here is that a bunch of people are going to falsely proclaim someone to be the Messiah when he is the counterpart of somebody far more important. And then those very same people, very conspicuous people, the same people who publicly announced the arrival of this one who corresponds to another, then again, they are the ones who are to come, and they're going to sully and devastate, corrupt, such that it becomes useless, ravaging and ruining the city. Who did that? The Romans, who became Roman Catholics, and the sanctuary. The Romans, who became Roman Catholics, and its end will come under an overpowering force. You don't want to be the people that proclaimed him the Messiah. Then, as the witness to the end, it is certain there will be devastating desolation and war. I don't think that's what most people expect. I mean, Christianity only has a singular basis for calling their Jesus the Christ. It's that passage. He never referred to himself as the Christ or as the Messiah, never once. He is never called the Christ or the Messiah by Yahweh. There are no prophecies about him being the Messiah in Christ unless it's that one. And that one said, it's a fraud. And the very people who pull off that fraud are the ones who are going to destroy the city, sully it, and the temple. How about that, Christian? Those things said, let's plow ahead, gentlemen, with where we intended to begin this program. Many of you are saying, boy, I hope he never gets food poisoning again because he said some really mean things.
I hope he doesn't get food poisoning again because that's miserable and, you know, I don't wish that upon anybody.
Yeah. Listen, the reality is the religious are despicable. God has given us such wonderful gifts. The greatest of them is matzah. And they spit it in his face. Do you know when you go to a Jewish website and you you read a list of their holidays?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that matzah is not among them?
I did not know that.
No, they've got seven holidays. Matzah is not among them. They'll mention Passover, and they'll mention Purim. They'll mention Rosh Hashanah. No, Passover's not among them.
So the
and of course, if you go to a Christian website and you say, what are their holidays? They don't mention any one of the seven that are important to you. Yeah, and the one that
Friday,
is essential.
A corruption of Passover. They've got Easter Sunday, a corruption of Bikurim. But
yep. And there's not even a mention of the single most important day each year. Well, let's turn back to Moshe. We were telling his story, then as we picked up the tale, the confirmation that God was going to accompany Moshe on the ultimate mission to liberate his children. By the way, the term that we've all used for the what happened as the Israelites left a country and headed to another. There are a couple of things that are a little bit troubling on this. First of all, I call it, and I'm wrong, I call it the Exodus. That's a Greek word. It's not the Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Yatza. Yahweh uses Yatza so many times, I can't even keep track of it. I mean, I would be surprised with 50 times in relation to this. It means to remove, to withdraw, to take out. Well, what is he taking out? He's taking out
his
the Mitzrayim. Do you know that Egypt is based on a Greek word that has to do with not knowing the name of the waterway that ran through the middle of the country? It doesn't mean Nile. The Egyptians didn't call the river the Nile. They just called the river the river. Why not? They had one of them. They called
it
the river.
Over more.
Yeah, so the Greeks, wanting Greek names over everything, just decided to call it for a Greek word for waterway. But even the people who live in that country today, they call themselves Mitzri. So we got two misnomers going around. Exodus, when it's a Yatza, which means to withdraw, to remove. Mitzrayim. And there's a, Yah uses the term so many times, that it's important to know that there are two ways to convey Mitzrayim. Capital M, it's the name of this place, this despicable country, with its religious and political despot. And then there's Mitzrayim that describes the oppression and the persecution that occurred as a result of their religion and their politics. And with Mitzrayim, the root basis of the name is Sur. Matsur means to ponder everything associated with Sur. Sur is the word that Yahweh uses when he talks about the time of Jacob's troubles. Sur.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it's describing is all the things that are hostile to his people. Religion, politics, conspiracy, economic schemes, military oppression, persecution. Creating crucibles not unlike a concentration camp. It is a condition that permeates the history of man. We've talked about this on this program before, and I share this on a regular basis with people I meet along life's way. Individually, people can be good or bad. Circumstances often depict if they are good or bad. Collectively, we're always bad. The history of man, civilization, is the history of man at its worst. every human civilization has been Mitzrayim. And they've done it through a caste system. I took the time not long ago to look at every major civilization in the world. And I search for caste systems among them. Not only did they all have one, they were all the same. There's only one person in the civilizations that had free will, the king. And there were several rungs where the majority of people lived where they had no freedom. The feudal system that the Roman Catholic Church imposed in Europe was such that if you were born into that feudal system at the lower rung, either as a slave or as a serf, there was no upward mobility. And that's how they oppressed people, usurped their free will, that you took away their ability even to know. God despises it. And so when God Yatzah removes and withdraws us from Mitzrayim, he's removing us from religion and politics and withdrawing its stench and its stain from our souls. That is the entire concept of matzah, of unyeasted bread. So we find that Moshe relaxed a bit when God fully confirmed the fact that he was going with him, that this mission would be Yahweh and Aaron with Moshe. And that was evidently good enough for the reluctant liberator. It should be for us.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there was only one thing left which had to be resolved. The Egyptians, like the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Phoenicians, the Minoans, the Greeks, the Babylonians, and the Assyrians, they had a plethora of gods, all of which had names, and all of which had been credited for all manner of miraculous human endeavors. So Moshe knew the first question he would be asked. And Moshe said to God, "Now look, if I go to the children of Israel, and I say to them, the God of your fathers sent me out. And they asked me, what is his personal and proper name? What shall I say to them?" Shemoth names, Exodus 13:13. Boy, I sure do like Yahweh's name for the book. Shemoth names in a book where he introduces us to his name.
His name?
Yeah. Shemoth names, Exodus 13:3. Isn't that the question that we should all be asking?
Sure.
What is his personal and proper name? What shall I say to them? And yet, religious Jews not only don't say it, they despise it.
Won't allow it to be said. Yeah,
won't even allow it to be said. And the largest, by far, Christian sect, Roman Catholicism, 1.2 billion people, have been outlawed. Yahweh's name. It is the most important mission a man or woman can undertake, reaching out to the children of Israel at God's behest. It is the most important question a man or woman can ask. What should I tell them is God's personal and proper name? Guys, you spend a lot of time observing the Torah. I don't know if either of you have done this, but I'll ask. You know, I took 2 weeks. I was probably a little overly fixated here, but I took 2 weeks and I looked at every single Hebrew word with a yod, a hey, and a wah in them. And I wrote them all down. I took this, word processor, I just wrote them all down and said, okay, you know, this is how the hay is pronounced, the wa is pronounced, the yod is pronounced. And then I looked at the words that were indisputable, things like Job, things like, which is Job. And I looked at words like shalom, said words like Torah,
mm-hmm.
Elohim, the words that are the most commonly known and spoken in the Hebrew language. Everybody knows what shalom means. Everybody knows what Torah means. And yet the only letter that had any question as to how it was pronounced was the waw. And there it is in Torah. There it is in shalom. There it is in Eloah, the basis of El and Elohim. Did you ever try to replicate any of that to see if you came to the same conclusion that there's only one possible way to pronounce God's name?
Someone challenged me on how I knew it. At the time I was using Yahweh. And I'm like, okay, well, I can prove to you the pronunciation easily. And I spent a couple hours researching, and I came to the same exact conclusion as you did. I'm like, well, no, Yahweh's not right. Yahuwah makes most sense, given everything, examining. I didn't probably go through every word like you did, but just examining the most common words using it, it became clear. I'm like, yeah, that's it.
That's it. Yeah, it's so irrefutable and so easily determined. I mean, you didn't need to take 2 weeks. You can do it in 15 or 20 minutes. All you end up doing after the 15 or 20 minutes is reaffirming what you learned in the first 15 or 20 minutes. Story doesn't change. It's channel. Of course, one of the most interesting aspects of it is that we're told in this next statement that it's based on the verb haya. And, well, that's got three of the four letters in Yahweh's name, doesn't it? Do you hear anybody out there saying, boy, you can't say haya? Is there any religious Jew saying, can't pronounce Torah? Can't be saying shalom? No. Do you think that it's some great mystery? There's 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. Three of those 22 letters are in Yahweh's name. They're all vowels. They're part of thousands of words, all of which are pronounceable, except when they get to this one name. All of a sudden, those same letters are mystified and unpronounceable.
You may use Haya, which contains two of them, but, you know, who said this? It says Elohim, which uses the third. There you go.
Correct.
Everything you need to know how to pronounce is given in this one sentence.
That is correct.
Is it ever almost 99%, or at least in the high percentiles, when the hay at the end is always pronounced with an A-H? I can't find hardly any H's.
At the end of a word, it's about 99.8%.
That's what I thought. That's what
percent.
I thought, yeah.
When the hay is in the middle of a word, it's about 94-95%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a few times, but 5-6% A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 5-6% A, and 95% and at the end it's 99% plus And there are some places where the more modern lexicons will tell you that the wa is pronounced as a u, as in Yahuda, like Yahudim. And while I don't change that, because, you know, I don't have a lexicon basis for doing so, I'm willing to bet that just as Dode's name, D-W-D, Dode is Dode, not Dude, Yahuda, Yahudim, it's based on a combination of Dode's name and Yahweh's name. It means Yahweh's beloved. It's probably Yahuda, as opposed to Yahuda. But, you know, we will see. And one of the things we ought to know is that since Yahweh chose a man with a thick tongue and a stutterer, probably spoke better than more clearly than I do, but nonetheless, he was not the most articulate guy, even in his own family. To present his name, he most certainly isn't concerned if we mispronounce it or mispronounce any Hebrew word.
But please say it. Please use it.
Please say
7,000
it.
7,000 times.
No, yes. So many seek the will of God for their lives, and yet here it is in this statement for the accepting. Many want to know God, and yet here is an engraved invitation. Well, God would give Moshe a direct answer. He did not do so directly. Such is his approach to most everything. His preference is to teach us so that we go beyond knowing to understanding. If I've studied for a lot of tests, and even in my my adult life, as I became a airline traffic or airline transport pilot with my certificate, it's an exceedingly long test. And on that test, there are like five or six formulas that are really long to calculate, which we all have flight computers that do it automatically for us, that the FAA wants you as a pilot to be able to do it manually. It's like getting your captain's license for 500 ton, you have to be able to do celestial navigation as if somebody has a handy sextant sitting around on their boat in the world of GPS satellites. But the calculations, to answer the one question, you know, it's a test of, you know, 400 questions, and there's going to be two or three of them that that you calculate that takes you 15, 20 minutes of calculations to get to the answer. And by the time you've plugged through that many numbers, the likelihood of getting it right is about, well, it's one choice in five. It's about 20%. And so what I found out is that the FAA likes to recycle their questions. And so there's like 10 of them that appear. Two of these 10 appear on every test. I just memorized the answers. So I saw this set of scenarios. No, that's the answer. Now, did I understand the answer under that basis? Of course not. I was given the answer. And I say that because if God just gave us the answer to everything directly, we'd be in the same boat. We'd know the answer but not understand it. And understanding is vastly more important than knowing. Okay, here comes the FAA. They're going to take away my pilot's license.
Just to tell me you're making all that up.
Yeah. And therein lies an explanation as to why God advised Adam to avoid the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. We humans have come to know many things, but understanding remains elusive. And without the proper perspective, without making the appropriate connections, without a discriminating filter, too much information can be distracting and disorienting, even misleading. And such is the undercurrent of religion, politics, patriotism, militarism, conspiracy. JP, I remember when you started translating. You were going to avoid the approach that I took, which is that I couldn't help it, man. I translate something and my mind would be flooded with insights, and I wanted to share them because I wanted everyone to appreciate what God said in context and go from knowing it to understanding it, just as I had. And to this day, I every statement that God makes, I share the insights that I think are pertinent to it. And you said, I'm just going to do the translations. I think that is what I want to do. I just laughed to myself. I said, okay, how long does this last? How long do you make it, JB?
It just slowly crept in. I started noticing the footnotes becoming more and more with each passage.
Yes.
To the point where I'd have a page that was half footnotes, half the actual translation.
Yes. So why not just put them into the actual process?
Exactly.
Introduce it and make the concluding statement. Because it is, that's how we learn. That's how we go from knowing the answer to understanding why God said it. And that's what happened with the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. They had all the answers, but no discipline as it comes to processing it so that they would understand right from wrong. So God wants us to know his name. But far more than this, he wants us to understand his name. Now, there's a bigger difference between Amun-Ra, Amun, Aten, Horus, Seb, Isis, Osiris, Sobek, et al., and Yahweh than his name. Yahweh's for real. He created man, and man created these rivals. By revealing the basis of his name, Yahweh answered the most important question we can ask. God exists. He also explained the basis of his name and its meaning. So God said, Wa Elohim Amar, he answered, explaining, to Moshe. Moshe means one who draws out. It's from Mashah, to withdraw. Oh, it's so important to know that. The entire story of Mitzrayim and the Yatsa is told so that we understand that God wants to remove the oppressive religious nature and the horrid stigma of politics from us. So God says to the one who draws out, I am Haya. I was. I exist. And I always will be. Call imperfect, first person singular, showing the way to the benefits of the relationship because Asher, I am. So God said to Moshe, I am showing the way to the benefits of the relationship because I am. Now you can render it, so God said to Moses, I am who I am. But what justification do you have to reduce Asher, which is a verb, a noun, and a preposition, to who? I mean, Asher is even a proper noun. It's the name of one of the 12 tribes. Asher is the name of the prettiest white dog you ever saw. Asher wants you to know that white dogs matter. Asher, in all seriousness, is why we're here. If it wasn't for Asher, we wouldn't be here today. Asher is the word that I just tripped over when trying to understand a prophecy that I think it wasn't until 6 months ago, maybe even more recent than that, several months ago, that I finally understood it. And it's got Asher right in the middle of it. And if you look up, and I'm sure both of you guys have done this, you look up the definitions of Asher, what you find is that its most prevalent definition is that it has God showing us the way to the benefits of the relationship. It has God leading us along a very restrictive, narrow, and yet remarkably correct path to get the most enjoyment out of life. It speaks of leading and of showing, of directing, of relationship, benefits, of life. It's a marvelous word. And I find that if it's written out conveying those thoughts, 95% of the time, all of those thoughts pertain to what God is saying. And in this case, the statement is so much richer. So God said to Moshe, the one who draws out, I am, I exist, showing the way to the benefits of the relationship because I exist, I am. Yahweh is based upon the vowels which comprise Hayah, meaning to exist. It provides all but one of the four letters in his name, even replicating the presentation of the two Hays. The order is different, with the opening Hay moved to the conclusion of his name, which essentially makes Yahweh's name feminine. Who would have thought? That doesn't mean that God's a woman, even though God has maternal and paternal characteristics. But his name is feminine. Any Hebrew name or word that ends with a hey is feminine. It's one of the things that's just so interesting about that is that Yahweh wants us to know him through his Torah, feminine, through his Ruach Kodesh, feminine, through his Berith covenant, feminine, Yahudah, his beloved people, feminine. So we ought to pay attention to that detail.
May I ask him? Who is the manifest? What is the manifestation that guides us through all of this, and blew the water away to let them through? Is Ruach Kodesh,
mm-hmm.
It's the set apart spirit, feminine.
The maternal nature of God, which is really God's presence in our world. Now, God's presence comes through His Torah teaching, His Word, but
which is feminine,
principally the Torah. Ruach Kodesh, set apart spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Feminine. Well, then there's the addition of the wah in their midst. It is the most commonly used letter in the Torah. And it's the first word in God's answer. Wah means and, then, so, in addition to increase, to include, and to associate in the next series of related things. In fact, the wah is used so regularly in Hebrew that the majority of the time, we actually don't even need to translate it, because in Hebrew, there were no periods or exclamation points or question marks to tell you that a sentence was over and a new sentence was beginning. God did it in a much more interesting way. He tells you, okay, the next thing is, this is the next sentence, wah.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's going to ask a question or state a question, rather than putting the question mark at the end, because your inflection determines whether the words that you're speaking are a question or not, he tells you right at the beginning, ma or me. This is an interrogatory. It's a question. Read it as such. So Wah tells you we're starting a new sentence, and in all likelihood, it is best understood in the context of the previous one. Bringing related things together. It's how we enhance comprehension. That's how we move from knowing to understanding. And that's a lot to wah, add, to a yod, open hand reaching down and out to us with the two hays, observant people standing up, reaching up, and looking up to God. Do you know that during the Yatzah, the great removal and withdraw, the bringing out of his people, throughout all of that process, one of the things that God says routinely about Chag Matzah is he did so with a shazak, a strong, firm, dependable, steadfast, and resolute hand. Over and over again. Over and over and over again. I want you to remember this day because I yatsed you. I removed you from Mitzrayim, from the crucibles of religious and political oppression, with a strong, powerful, influential, resolute, firm, and dependable hand. It's the same hand that is reaching down and out to us, the first letter in his name. His name is defined by the events that took place as his people were being freed and the Torah was being revealed. You know, the letter Yod, even if you didn't look at the ancient pictographs of Babylonian, mm-hmm. not of earliest Hebrew, the, mm-hmm. the names of the letters, like Bayeth for the B, the drawn in the mm-hmm. picture of a home. Well, Bayeth means home. Then you look at Yod, which has been corrupted from Yod. It means hand. It was drawn in the form mm-hmm. of a hand. It looks like a hand. Ain, the letter drawn in the form of an I in the original language. What does Ain mean? Hand.
Right?
Okay. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It means I. The words for the letters are exactly what the pictograph says.
Well, it's in three prominent things along those same lines, you know, the Yod and, mm-hmm. and Yisrael. It's a big deal in Ayel, which is you go from El to Ayel, and that's the ram. You've got Haya. And then, by the way, you've also got Yehuda, Yehuda.
Yeah, Yehuda.
So, I mean, everywhere you turn, his hand is what
right.
keeps us together. Is the way I would look at
yeah.
it. It's my
Yisrael.
Hand doing all the work. Yeah.
Correct. So his hand, by the way, happens to be in the middle of Haya. And Haya yeah. can be translated yes. has been, was, am, will be, and become. To exist, to occur, to happen, mm-hmm. and to transpire, to take place, to come about, and to abide. Haya appears 3,540 times in the Hebrew text, most always in the call, which is a literal, actual stem, denoting a genuine relationship, which should be interpreted genuinely. So that's Haya. The other word? Asher. One of the most revealing words in the entire Hebrew lexicon. It can be translated as simply as who, which, with, where, when, or so that, but it is best understood when it is rendered more completely as it was in God's declarative statement. My preference is to translate Asher as to show the steps along the way which lead to the benefits and blessings of the relationship, and as to guide and lead us along the correct, albeit narrow and restrictive path to get the most enjoyment out of living an upright life. Now, I am certain that in doing your translations, you guys have opened lexicons and looked at Asher.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you find when you do?
JB, you answer first. I got one little thing I throw in.
Depending on where you know, simple as, like you said, this, that, which, when you get into the depths of it, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because it's a verb, it's a noun, and it's a preposition.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and its verbal form is the dominant form of the word. It is almost everything we're talking about here is conveyed in the verbal form that defines the word. There is even a false god and a country named after Asher.
Mm-hmm.
Asher, as in Assyria, and Asherah, as in the pagan goddess. Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God. They love to usurp these important concepts. What were you going to throw in, Kirk?
Well, I was just going to say, if you look at the picture, you've got the Aleph, Shin, and the Rosh. So it basically is telling you what the nature of the relationship is. If we use Ashes, this is the relationship. So it defines it. What is he having a relationship? To whom is he having a relationship? Or who is he having a relationship with? One who observes. If you know the definition of Rosh, and we're not talking about someone who doesn't. You know, and what are they observing? Well, he tells you the first letter, the second letter, is the S, which is the nourishing word. It's strong like the teeth. And
right.
If you use it as in this context, if you use them as nourishing words, then he's observing that. And the Aleph is in this context is the Ram, the Ayil, Yahweh, El. You know, all related. So it tells you don't have to stretch it.
So the Rosh,
say it's a relationship word.
Yeah, exactly. It is a.
And they're all going in the right direction, and they're all associated by that as well. So.
Correct.
It may seem like a simple word, but it conveys everything that you translate. If you never looked at anything but the pictographs, you would say, he got it right.
Yep. It speaks of establishing a relationship. No matter where you are, it always develops a relationship between things, making a comparison, making a connection, a relevant and relative reference. Resulting in better understanding of Yahweh's message. Asher can serve as a particle, a conjunction, a noun, a name, and a verb. Asher is a blessing. Now, Yahweh's answer conveys all of the following. I exist. I was, I am, and I always will be. I am God. I am responsible for your very existence. I am the source of your continued existence. I am exactly who I say I am. And therefore not what men say of me. And then he said, tell this to the children of Yisrael. I am, Ihaya, has sent me to you. Now, there's no higher authority or greater calling. Source of our existence, the only God who actually exists was going on a journey from Mount Horeb in Arabia to the Nile Delta and then back again with an 80-year-old stuttering shepherd to rescue his wayward children and oppressed children from the most disgusting religious and political military place on earth. It would be a
one tall order.
One tall order. And, of course, could God have gone alone? No. Could God have prevailed over the Egyptians without the 80-year-old stuttering shepherd? No.
Yeah.
No, he couldn't. He can't be who he is not.
Yeah.
He doesn't work alone. So could he? No, he couldn't. He needed to go with Moshe because that's who he is.
That's the relationship.
It's just like when Yahweh returns, all this stuff that's going to happen where the world is prepared for us to return to the Garden of Eden, God's not doing it alone. Doing it with Moshe. So I think we have to be really careful when we say, could God have done this without going in there with the 80-year-old broken-down stuttering shepherd?
He wouldn't.
The answer is no.
Only if he could find someone else to do it with.
Yeah, only if. Only if.
There really wasn't many people jumping at the door for that.
No. No, and even today, you know, you've got 100,000 Haredi that are willing to go to the tomb of some nitwit that died almost 1,800 years ago and who wrote a book that has led them as far astray as anything that's ever been conceived, and you don't have a single one that'll lift a finger to write a kind word about Yahweh. No, it's hard.
Wow. That's,
even
wow.
if you're gone, it's hard to find someone who is willing to go with you. God's really unpopular.
Wow.
No,
I know, but wow.
Yeah, I don't think he could because, quite frankly, when Moshe threw his temper tantrum and said, I'm just not going to do this. No. And you know, he said, you know, I stutter, and he had all these excuses. And you know, God had all the answers. Who the heck do you think made the mouth? You know, if I made the mouth, don't you think I can make yours work? You know, come on, pal. But he got angry, very frustrated. Well, why would God get frustrated over an 80-year-old stuttering shepherd telling him, I don't want to do that?
This is the only
because
choice.
He didn't have
this
any other choices.
Choice. Yeah,
there were no other choices.
Choices.
None.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it. Hey, fellas, we wouldn't be doing this if God had better choices.
We could be reading it.
I'm sorry. He just doesn't. And he doesn't want to work alone. So Moshe got this opportunity, and I want to tell you, Moshe's my guy. I think Moshe's one of the coolest dudes in the history of humanity. I'm really impressed with this man, and it's obvious why God wanted to do this with him. He's flat out an extraordinary individual. One of the few people that will stand up and do the right thing when doing the right thing is not in his interest. He had character. Now, it has been said so many times that we can be certain Yahweh wants everyone to know that he was on a mission to liberate his people, the children of Israel, from institutional, religious, and political persecution. God was not saving Orthodox Jews, faithful Christians, deadbeat Muslims, through their religion, but would instead mock religion while shattering its controlling consequence. Rather than blessing a nation, he would destroy it.
Take note, USA.
Yeah. God was not issuing commands, delineating a set of laws, or asking anyone to obey him. He was instead freeing Israel from bondage. And that is a stunning blow to Orthodox Jews, to Christians and Muslims. They have all sought to oppress Jews, either with their debilitating laws, their ruthless persecution, or genocidal rage. When such institutions stand in direct opposition to Yahweh, we can be assured that God despises them and will destroy them. But once again, not alone. He's returning with the most courageous defender of his people the world has ever known. Dode. He's the one that whose title Messiah and title King, title Son of God, that the people who destroyed the city and its temple usurped for their crowning of their Jesus as the Christ. It is with profound animosity that I bring you this next statement. My frustration isn't with God, but it's with his creation. It matters not if you read the KJV, the NKJV, the IV, the NIV, the ASB, the NASB, the ESV, or the JPS. That sounds like America's federal policing forces, doesn't it?
It does. Alphabet soup. Very good. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, there's a few score more. The error is universal among them. Yahweh answered Moses' question directly, providing the prophet and liberator with his personal and proper name. Not once, but twice. He even said that Yahweh will be my name forever, my memorial for all generations. And yet, almost every scholar and theologian responsible for crafting almost every English translation eliminated God's name and replaced it with Satan's ambition and title, Lord.
Yep.
The single and solitary name capable of saving us from mankind's religious and political schemes was removed by the men responsible for those very schemes. You can see I'm still not feeling better. Yeah, I'm sorry. I am just so frustrated with how corrupt and dishonest the religious have been. And I want to tell you, my frustration is a billionth of God's. And furthermore, Wa'od, again and again repeating himself beyond what would be expected to bear witness. Oh, what a statement. Wa'od, again and again repeating himself beyond what would be expected to bear witness. God, Elohim, the Almighty, declared, Amah, stated and testified, announced and proclaimed, communicated and conveyed, call imperfect, actually and literally stated, with unfolding implications over time, to Moshe, the one who draws out, you should say this to the children of Yisrael, Yahweh, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Yishak, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my personal and proper name forever. This is the way I want to be remembered throughout every generation and dwelling place. Shemot, names, Exodus 3:15. God, if there was just one verse that they could get right, what a difference it would make.
What I love is how many Christian websites and Christians will defend, you know, God's name being unpronounceable by pointing to the verse immediately before this, saying, he said, I am who I am. Tell them, I am sent me. See, he doesn't have a name. And it's like, did you read line?
Yeah.
I mean, literally the next line completely obliterates your entire argument.
Yes.
That's what happens.
How
when you
can Jesus have come in his Father's name if God's name is I am?
I am.
Or if his name is John.
Do you remember, Greg?
Just read the next verse.
Yeah, just read the next verse. That's the same thing I tell people who claim that there is a New Testament, a new covenant, because it says that there's a new covenant that'd be different than the existing one in Jeremiah 31. Well, read the cotton picking next line.
Read 32.
Oh, by the way, read the line in front of it. That the renewal and reaffirmation
context,
of the covenant is with Yisrael and Yehuda, not with a cockamamie church. And the next line says the difference is going to be that I'm going to write my name and inscribe my Torah inside of them. Oh, well, that pretty much ends the notion of a Christian New Testament, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just read the next
line. Context
How can you
king.
Have a Jesus and Jesus be God, and then you call God Lord, when in fact he says, you should tell the children of Israel that Yahweh, God of your fathers, God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my personal and proper name. This is the way I want to be remembered throughout every generation and dwelling place throughout time. God, just read the words. God, the Y is in Yisrael, isn't it? Why is this so difficult?
Yes. Do you remember when you said, years ago, I know you wrote it first, but on the show, first time I heard it, and you said, if the rabbis in Yathrop knew his name and used it, and they quoted and they gave him read from the Torah instead of their Talmud, there'd be no Islam.
Correct.
They'd say, well, his name is Allah. No, he's not. His name is Yahweh.
Yeah, as I was having a conversation last night with Leah, I said, if these idiot rabbis had simply tossed away the Talmud and had paid attention to Yahweh and his Torah, Christianity would never have existed. They would have said, this is Yahusha. His name is Yahweh Saves. He is the Passover Lamb. He is not the Messiah. The Messiah is Dode, you idiot. Look, read the damn book. He's not the Son of God. Son of God is Dode. Read the book. He's the Passover Lamb. Now, Passover Lamb doesn't get resurrected. The Passover Lamb dies to nourish the family. Doesn't scamper out of the fire and do a dance. If they had only paid attention to these words, there wouldn't be a God named Jesus, because everyone would know Yahweh's name. But what about all those people, that 100,000 of them, trampling 45 to death, wearing their black mourning coats, their black hats, in honor of a dead man who wrote despicable things? God, read the words. And furthermore, God declared to Moshe, you should say this to the children of Yisrael, the descendants who want to engage and endure with God. Yahweh, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Yitzhak, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my Shem, my personal and proper name, La'olam, forever. It isn't one of my names. It isn't whatever you want to call me. I got one name. The only way I want to be known. Door. Repeated twice. Is anybody telling you that it's D-W-R, that it's D-W? You know, they want to change the W to a V?
Okay.
They know it's door. Yeah. Always transliterated door. D-O-W-R. Door. And, of course, it's door throughout all time, every generation, every dwelling place. This is my name. If you don't know Yahweh's name, you don't know him.
Bingo.
If you don't know him, he doesn't know you.
Certainly,
and there's only one
prayers.
Thing worse, I think, than smearing God, discrediting God by calling him a name other than Yahweh. And that is using the name Yahweh in the midst of promoting your politics, your religion, or your conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
God has one agenda. That is to liberate his children from the political and religious schemes of man so that he can bring them to his home. That is the story of the Torah. That is the story of matzah. The story of the Bereth. The story of the Mikra, the Moed. It is the story that is being told right here. Tell them that it's Yahweh. God of Abraham, God of Yitzhak, God of Jacob. Why do you use those names? Abraham represents one thing and one thing alone, the covenant. I am Yahweh. I am the God of the covenant. Yitzhak represents one thing and one thing alone, that the purpose of that covenant was to give birth to a happy child, bring great joy to the parents. Jacob means one thing and one thing alone. God renamed him Yisrael. I am the God of Yisrael. I am the God of the covenant. I am the God responsible for joyous life within a family construct of raising children. Ah, it's powerful. It's so simple. It's so elegant. It's so beautiful. As I say to people all the time, the actual God who is presented in the Torah He's brilliant, and he's accessible, and he's lovable. He's likable. He's genuine. He's fun to be around. Yahweh's God's name. Yahweh has been and will always be God's one and only name. Does not matter who you are, what language you speak, or where you live. He does not accept, answer, respond to any other name. Those who says he does not care what you call him would be dead wrong. If you know God, you refer to him as Yahweh. If you do not, you use a host of other words. If you're not using Yahweh's name, God is not listening to you. He does not know you. He has no interest in you. Your worship, your praise, your prayers are a waste of time and energy. Yahweh is the one who established the covenant, doing so with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob. Yahweh is our liberator. He is our savior. Yahweh is the name Moshe used to deliver the children of Israel. God has no other name. The covenant has no other sponsor. There is no other savior. The Lord is the title and name of another spirit. The Lord is not God. The Lord cannot save. There is no inheritance right associated with man's religious deities. Despite the utter ignorance involved in the evangelical rite of holding up an English translation of their Bible and proclaiming that it is the inerrant word of God, the Creator, Father, Savior, and Author did not say, "The Lord God is my name forever, my memorial, and the way I want to be remembered." Now, while I am irrelevant, if I told you that my name is Yada, and that Yada was how I always wanted to be known, and you ignored my request and called me Master instead, I would know several things. First, you don't know me. Second, you do not love me. Third, you're intent in irritating me. Yahweh is God's name. The same lessons apply.
How do
your
they
father
have one to
just,
that? You don't respect me.
Yeah, that's right. You don't. You don't respect me. If you don't know my name, you do not respect me. If you're going to call me Lord, one who controls, one who owns, the name that I gave to Hasatan, the adversary, you don't respect me at all. It's despicable. One of the most disgusting things that anyone could possibly do is to call the Father of the Covenant a Lord, particularly when he gave you his name. He didn't just write his name once. It's 7,000 times. It's hard to miss. It is truly amazing. And as we contemplate what took place in Israel, the single greatest civilian disaster in the nation's history, new nation's history, it's only since 1948. They've had far worse disasters in war when Muslims attacked them, but this was the largest civilian
self-inflicted
disaster. Yeah. And that every one of those religious morons in their black coats that went and trampled their ilk, and not one of them has ever said Yahweh's name. Not one of them respects Yahweh's name. Every one of them worships and values and reveres rabbis above God. That's why God said, you know, for the better part of 2,000 years, I looked for someone, anyone that I could work with. found no one. He made a commitment that his prophets would all be Yehudim and Israelites. There were none. That's why by the time we reach Malachi, it's over. There wouldn't be another. Radio silence. And it wasn't until we began to take Yahweh's word seriously, his name seriously, his covenant seriously, his Torah seriously, his prophets seriously, and translated them as accurately as was possible, and then began to write about what God was telling us, that his message resonated again. It's been a long time. My wife and children bear my name because they're part of my family. Our Heavenly Father's name is Yahweh. For the same reason, his children are called Yahudim, related and beloved of Yah. For those who may have fallen victim to the religious lie that G-D, God's name, is too sacred to be spoken, and or no one really knows how to pronounce it, here's some news for you. God just told Moshe to say it.
Sorry. So straight.
How do you explain that?
Mm-hmm. You can smoke it.
Mm. Yeah. And by the way, does he ever say, don't you say it for fear of mispronouncing it? Does he ever say,
no.
Those four letters in my name, three, one's repeated, that you can't pronounce any word that those letters are in.
Got those in them. Yeah.
The four Hebrew letters, Yod, He, Wah, He, which comprise Yahweh's name. They're not unique. They're ubiquitous throughout the Torah. And yet, no one claims that the entire Hebrew language is unpronounceable. The fact is, there are vowels and consonants in ancient Hebrew, the language of Revelation. The Aleph, the Ein, are vowels, as are the Yod, the He, and the Wah. We know from countless other words that the Yod is pronounced similar to the letter Y in the English word, yes. A He is pronounced Ah, as in Haya, the very basis of Yahweh's name. And we know from Torah, T-W-R-H, that the Wah conveys the O sound in Hebrew. Therefore, God's name is Yahweh. He has provided us with the proper vocalization. We're without excuse. Fellas, that's probably a good place to
stop. Yeah.
Yeah. To stop for this evening, and we'll pick up here next week as Yahweh says, choose to go of your own free will, walk, and gather at this time the elders of the children of Israel and say to them, Yahweh. Oh, can't pronounce it. God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Yishak and of Jacob, became visible to me, saying, I have examined and taken into account on your behalf what is being done to you in Mitzrayim, the crucibles of political and religious oppression. And I gave my word that I would lift you up and withdraw you from such persecution and oppression, Oni, in the realm of the crucibles, to the land flowing with milk and honey. We'll pick that up next week. There's a lot to learn. And I've got to tell you, I've been working to finally work my way through the first half of the Matzah chapter, I've learned so much. I just have convinced that we're all going to enjoy the coming to know how important this day is to Yahweh, to our lives, and how often Yahweh repeated its purpose. such that it should be demystified. We should clearly understand what Pesach represents, what Matzah represents, and how they both lead to the Bukurim and to Shavua, and that how those who have capitalized on those first four Moed Mikre are in a position to Teruah, so that ultimately over these next 12 years, Yahweh can reconcile his relationship with the 70% of Israelites in Yahudim who aren't completely bamboozled with religion, and that collectively we can all camp out with him for 1,000 years as the earth is transformed back into the Garden of Eden. That is the story, and this is a wonderful episode of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. All right. Happy Shabbat to one and all. It's our pleasure to be with you. Thank you for doing such a wonderful job last week. Great to have you back, JB. And my bless you all. Good night.
Shabbat shalom. Good night, y'all.